Hey, welcome back to Good Growing with a Garden Gal, and that would be Teresa Williams. And Teresa, why don't you share a little bit about yourself again? You work for?
I work for the Wexford Conservation District, and our mission is to enable people to be stewards of their natural resources.
So each county in the state of Michigan has a soil conservation district?
Yes, they do. In a few counties, Chippewa, Luce, Mackinac comes to mind. It's three counties that came together. Just south of us is Osceola Lake, where Osceola and half of Lake County are combined. But most places in Michigan, it's a single county.
So, yes, if somebody wanted some information, because you've been sharing, they would want to call their local county.
Yes, and they can search for their county conservation district, or sometimes it's still known by the older name of a soil conservation district. Mm-hmm. And that's all over the country, not just Michigan.
You always see the signs when you're going into a specific county on the freeway. You're now entering.
That's right.
Yeah, the Osceola County Soil Conservation District, or whatever mm-hmm. that it would be as you go through there. Hey, today we're talking about designing vegetable gardens. I'm George Corliss, and Jalene Fenner is my co-host. And we're going to talk about the possibility of getting a greater yield from your garden by planting. Mm-hmm. And Teresa, what about trellising? Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
That's a way that you can get a greater yield by growing up. And we're used to thinking of pea trellises because most peas grow up. If you've never tried them before, I'd like to suggest to your listeners to try pole beans because they're exceptionally flavorful. They're a lot easier to pick. And if you think about 3 square feet of soil in your garden, you can get a whole lot more out of the 3 square feet by trellising those beans and letting them grow up. But again, it's pole beans, not the bush beans, that do that. Other things that you can trellis is some people even trellis squash. Mm. You have to have some pretty strong trellising to do that. You can trellis cucumbers. I've seen people who have hoop houses who trellis tomatoes up a single line of trellis string, and they can grow way up and get many more plants per square foot. So think about it, you can go up and get more.
So the cucumbers, I know that Great Lakes Adventist Academy grows. They have big greenhouses, and that's how they do. And I've seen the cucumbers, and they're long cucumbers. So it's a different type of a cucumber, maybe?
There's some varieties of cucumbers that are more adapted to greenhouse growing than others. They're usually not pickling varieties, but more of your salad varieties.
Okay, so then even if you don't have a greenhouse, but is there a, you know, to do, like you were saying, beans, it's pole beans, not bush beans.
Okay.
So same thing for some of these other plants, like the cucumbers. Is it a different kind of a cucumber?
When you're reading the description about a particular cucumber, if it says something like space saver, that's probably not the plant to try on a trellis because that means that that plant is going to naturally be a small bush. But most cucumber varieties do send out a long vine.
Okay.
How close, when you're talking about these trellising, can you plant the, like say the beans that you're talking about, how close can you plant them together?
I put one bean plant about 4 to 6 inches apart in a row in the trellis, and then they're growing up 8 feet or so.
Now, a lot of times when you're talking about trellising, I've seen, and maybe I'm wrong, I'm thinking that's what that is, but they have poles in the ground, and then they have string that's just kind of wound intermittently between the poles. Is that kind of what it is?
That's one kind. You can do everything from basically creating an arch and tying twine at the top of the arch and making it come down to the ground. That's one simple way to do it. One very sturdy way that's going to last for years is you can buy something called a livestock panel from a farm supply store. And those are 16 feet long and about 4 feet high. And you could hang two of them, you know, one on the ground and one that 4 feet off the ground. And you've got a nice tall trellis, and it's indestructible.
Yeah,
you can garden
sturdy
for 50 years on that trellis.
How much does something like that cost?
Last time I purchased them, I think they were about $16 for one panel. It's been a while, so I'm not sure how current that price
is. That's pretty inexpensive, though.
Yeah, and then you add the cost of the posts as well. And yeah, they're indestructible. They're going to last forever.
Well, that's it. It lasts forever.
Yeah.
Now, what about succession planning? A lot of times people, Jelaine has mentioned that she has an easy time growing lettuce. Mm-hmm. Well, you could grow lettuce, what, 6, 8, 10 times during the growing season?
Yeah. Well, it depends how you grow your lettuce. If you like to just harvest the baby leaves or if you like to get it to full head. But even if you're the longest lettuce variety out there is probably going to be mature within 2 months. So think about that. You could start some plants out in, say, late April, harvest that in late June, and then you could have another that you harvested in late August, and maybe some baby lettuce after that into September, October. You can also think about, well, if I'm planting tomatoes, when the tomatoes are young and small, I could sneak in some radishes around the base of that tomato. Or carrots usually don't take the full season. You could plant carrots in the spring and then maybe put in some lettuce after the carrots are harvested. So you can double, maybe even triple your garden space by planting two crops in one area.
What about putting your vegetables at specific places in the garden? You probably don't want to put your squash in the middle, I'd have to imagine, because they're going to just...
Yeah, if you can put it on the edge, it's nice because they will take over. Or put it where we'll plant squash next to corn, and then by the time the corn is about done, the squash can take over and continue growing there. If it's a well-behaved plant, in other words, one that doesn't have a vine, you can determine where it's going to go pretty easily, not worry about is it going to spill out over, but those viney crops will spill out over, and you got to give them a little more elbow room in the garden.
Are there any other types of plants, like maybe cucumbers, that maybe do the same thing?
The vining crops the summer squash, winter squash, cucumbers, melons, watermelons, they all do. Vines, they just want to go. So you have to think about, okay, it's nice and small now, but in 3 months, where's that vine going to want to go? And can you manage where that vine wants to go by going up or keeping it in? Or
now, Teresa, how can people go about extending the season of their, you know, growing their gardens?
In the spring, our limiting factor is warmth. And in the fall, our limiting factor is sunlight. So in the spring, we have to think about what things can boost our warmth. And that can be everything from warming up the soil by putting a piece of clear plastic on the soil for a couple weeks before you would normally plant to get that warmed up. You can put small covers over. As simple as you can transplant, say, an individual broccoli plant and then take a 1 gallon milk jug and cut off the bottom and put that over the top of the broccoli plant. And you can, by that way, put your broccoli plants out maybe 2 weeks earlier than you normally would. That's real simple and really inexpensive. You can get a little more elaborate by putting in what we call low tunnels, where you have some kind of support, either something like number nine wire or PVC pipe, and then you would put either that floating row cover that I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, or you can put plastic on top. The plastic, you've got to vent on sunny days, though, so it takes a bit more management. This is a good option for if you're home most of the time. If you leave early in the morning to go to work, the floating row cover is going to be a better option because it's self-ventilating. So anything you can do in the spring to boost that warmth a bit. In the fall, certainly we want to protect from early frosts. You can do that with those floating row covers again. You can do it with some overhead irrigation. Maybe you even want to go to the step of having a hoop house, which is a wonderful way to get even a month out of each end of the growing season. In that fall, it's really tricky to do things to get more sunlight. That's where you have to plan ahead and say, okay, if I want to extend this crop, I really have to make sure that there's no shade there, because sunlight is at a premium in September and October. So it's mainly planning ahead to make sure that there's no shade there.
So I have a question. Being my husband farms and like corn, the soil has to be a certain temperature. And so when you were talking about in the spring, warming it up, what temperature should the soil be to be warm enough to plant?
That varies by crop. Usually for corn, for instance, we want the soil at about 60 degrees. And if it's not, then the seed can just rot into the ground. Yeah,
that's why he says he doesn't like it less than 55. Yeah.
Something like a radish seed or a spinach seed, however, they germinate quite well in cool soils. So your soil could be 50 degrees and they'd be just fine. Something like a cucumber or a melon, they want a much warmer soil. So they want a soil temperature of close to 80 degrees to germinate. So it depends a bit on the crop.
Okay.
80 degrees.
So that's optimum germination.
Wow.
Temperature for those viney crops, the squashes, the cucumbers.
Doesn't seem like we get that many 80 degree days sometimes.
But the key is soil temperature, not sunlight or not air temperature. Yeah. So the soil can absorb that sunlight, and the soil on a sunny day is often warmer than the air.
I gotcha.
So it's soil temperature that's critical, not the air temperature.
Okay, the big debate, Teresa. To rototill or not to rototill?
Ooh, that's a loaded question.
What do you think?
I think tillage is a useful tool, but not something to be overused. To me, you need to have a real clear reason. What is the tillage going to do for you at this point in time that you really need it? If you're starting a brand new garden and you want to grow in it this year and you've got sod, grass, rototilling is a good option. However, if this is a garden you've been gardening for several years and the soil's fairly mellow, there's nothing tilling is going to accomplish for you that is so valuable that it's worth destroying all your earthworm tunnels and your beneficial fungal networks that are in the soil. So it can be very useful, but have a good reason why tillage is the answer for what you need to have.
So every year, you don't need to rototill your garden because it's the same place you've been gardening.
Yeah. So what you think about, what is it going to accomplish for me if I till? It does warm the soil up a bit, so it will do that. Rototilling is different than plowing. When you rototill, you're basically pulverizing the soil. So what is pulverizing the soil going to accomplish for you? And most of the time, it's not going to be beneficial because it's going to destroy those earthworms. It's going to destroy the soil structure, and it's going to destroy the fungal networks that are beneficial. So you've got to have a really good reason to destroy all those things, or else why would you be doing it? And it's kind of like a rite of spring in a lot of areas.
Well, that's what I was going to say. People just automatically do it.
But there's not really a good reason to do it.
Okay, but wait a minute. What is the alternative?
The alternative is...
Don't tell me I'm going to get a shovel and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to turn my soil.
No, you don't, need to do that. If you have weeds, you might need to use a hoe to get rid of a few weeds. But especially if you mulch the garden in the fall, you don't need to do anything. Just plant directly into it.
So maybe that's one of the keys. We need to mulch it in the fall.
Yeah. There's a tool that I have, I'm seeing around more, called a broad fork. And if you can picture a dinner fork and make it 20 times bigger, you get the idea. And you stick this fork into the soil and you pull it back and it kind of loosens things up just a bit. And that's really all you need.
Kind of like a pitchfork?
A bigger version of a pitchfork, yeah, that you can step on. It has a broad, flat area that you step on.
Right. So it's not turning up, but it's loosening the soil.
Yeah, and there's no need to turn the soil over. It doesn't really accomplish anything for you.
I think
unless you're starting with sod, and then you've got to do something to break up all those roots. But most of the time, you don't need to use a rototiller.
I think this is one of the most important things we heard today. Okay, so what about gardening in a smaller area?
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard about square foot gardening. Can you tell us about that?
Square foot gardening was a design that someone put together to talk about in each square foot of your garden, to lay it out in a grid, plant so many plants. And it's a good concept to think about, well, how much space does each plant need? That's a great concept. The book that I've seen on it, something to remember is that was written by somebody who's gardening in California. And California conditions are very different from Michigan conditions. They have much more sunlight and much drier weather and much less problem with fungal diseases than we have here in Michigan. So spacings that are good for California aren't necessarily good for Michigan. I'll just give one example. In the one that I saw had you putting 4 bean plants per square foot. That's way too close for Michigan conditions. You'll get all kinds of mildew and fungal diseases in your bean plants if you put them that close. So think about how much area does each plant need where you're growing? What area will get it enough sunlight? Because plants are solar collectors. They produce food for us when they can take sunlight and convert it into, through photosynthesis, convert it into food that we can eat. So we want to make sure that our plants have enough area to be those solar collectors and enough area for the breezes to dry off the leaf surfaces so we don't have the fungal diseases.
Okay, so like for Michigan, the square foot farming, how would you find out? Is it because each individual plant is different?
Correct.
So it's just, you know, finding out, researching each plant, how close they should be for Michigan?
If you've never gardened before, I'd suggest going to visit somebody else's garden during the growing season and take your tape measure and look at this. This is what I did in my own garden is I went out and said, okay, for beans, this variety of beans, what spacing gives this bean plant, this bean variety, enough room to do its job of being a good solar collector and enough room for the breezes to dry off the vegetation? And in our garden, I've decided that the maximum density I want is no closer than every 12 inches for a bean plant.
So a square foot planting is not 4 beans, like you said.
Well, it can be for one bean plant.
Okay.
It, you know, if you're going to mark your garden out in a grid, find out how big the grid needs to be for that plant. Mm. Like 1 square foot is not nearly enough for a tomato here, but
no,
it's enough for one bean plant. And I know carrots, I can put in at a density of 4 inches in all directions. And that's plenty of room for a carrot. Okay. Every 4 inches all the way around. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, that brings to an end this program, A Good Growing with a Garden Gal. And you can actually check this out once again on our website at strongtowerradio.org, and it'll be under Designing Your Vegetable Garden. And Teresa, thank you so much for being here today.
Lots of good information.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
I didn't like the answer when it came to rototilling.
Why, do you like to rototill?
I do. I like getting on my tractor and rototilling.
Oh, okay.
There's recreational tillage that happens in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
Yes. Recreational. I like that.
Well, folks, thanks so much for tuning in today. And always remember that God loves you with an everlasting love, and he'll never leave you nor forsake you, even for a moment.
Bye, folks.